Ahoy, mateys! Welcome to the GameBuoy.org video game podcast, your twice monthly port of call for gaming news and views that maybe aren't on your radar, but most definitely should be. I'm your host, Captain Spike, and with me, as always, is First Mate Slagkick.
Yarr!
Today is June 18th, 2016, and this is episode 113, E3 2016 wrap-up.
Mmm, sounds delicious.
Right? Welcome once again, our lovely and beautiful listeners, to another episode of the GameBuoy.org video game podcast.
GameBuoy.org video game podcast.
This week, we're discussing E3 2016 wrap-up. So, buckle in and get ready for that. But first, we have our usual slate of follow-ups and news bits. Slaggy, you want to get us started?
Yeah, you might remember that we talked about Dead Rising 4 during the Microsoft E3 press conference, part of our discussion on that episode. And we have confirmation from Capcom that it is going to be a timed exclusive for 1 year for Xbox Ones and a Windows 10 exclusive for 90 days.
So on the PC platform, it will be on the Windows Store only for the first 3 months. And on the console space, it will be on Xbox One only for the first year. Is that correct?
That's how I understand it.
Wow, that's very interesting. I've seen a lot of talk out there on the internet about how Capcom is siding with first parties for all of their big franchises. And this definitely just sort of adds to that conversation. Obviously now Microsoft has Dead Rising, Sony has Street Fighter, Nintendo has Monster Hunter. It's really interesting everything that Capcom has done to sort of spin things around from how dire things were for them just a few months ago.
That's true.
We also have word here from the producer of Dragon Ball Xenoverse 2, Masayuki Hirano-san, who said at E3 this year that they are hoping to add content from the currently ongoing Dragon Ball Super anime series.
Yes!
I'm a big fan about this. I'm a big fan of this. I love Dragon Ball Super. I thought Xenoverse was a fantastic game. So I would definitely be very interested in, seeing this come to pass.
I wonder if they would put Monaka in the game.
Oh, man. I hope. They could do, like, some soft body physics simulation.
Oh, boy. Don't even go further.
We also have word that during E3, Kingdom Hearts Unchained Key released in Europe.
That's awesome.
Yeah. It's a fantastic iOS and Android game. I was really surprised to hear that it wasn't available in the EU already, but I'm glad that it has been remedied. All Kingdom Hearts fans should give this game a chance. It's pretty good.
And speaking of Kingdom Hearts, the co-director of Kingdom Hearts 3, Tai Yasue-san, was speaking with GameSpot, and they had inquired about whether we might be seeing 1.5 and 2.5 HD, HD remix.
Yeah.
On PS4, and his answer was, "We haven't come to a decision and nothing is announced yet. We listen to our fans and our players and see what they think about it. And yeah, I'm not ruling it out, but we're not making an announcement just yet."
Yeah, that to me sounds like that's going to happen.
I hope so.
At this point, I think it's actually likely to happen. There's something about the phrasing of, like, we listen to our fans and our players, but we're not making an announcement yet. I think that overwhelmingly the fans / players are demanding 1.5 and 2.5 remix on the PS4 platform. I, at this point, expect that after 2.8 Final Chapter Prologue releases, we'll get like a 2.9 that's just all of them in one box.
That's my thing. Like, I can't see them announcing a 1.5 plus 2.5, like, when 2.8's not even out yet.
Exactly. Absolutely. And last, but certainly not least, on our follow-ups here, we have word that Dragon Quest Builders will be launching October 11th in North America, October 14th in Europe.
Oh, that's great. I can't wait for some Dragon Quest Balders.
And apologies if that is redundant news. I had heard about this release date before we recorded our E3 episodes, but I hadn't seen any like official press release. So if we previously mentioned this in an episode, well, it wasn't strictly official then and it is now? All right, let's have some news.
News. Oh my god, news.
First piece of news that we have here is very exciting. Mastiff Games is bringing Falcom's beloved action RPG, Gurumin, to the Nintendo 3DS. This will be releasing on the eShop July 2016.
That's awesome.
Yeah, you know, Gurumin was previously released on the PSP and on PC. It's available on Steam. It's a really fun little game. I would highly recommend it to people who like sort of Zelda-like or, you know, Zelda adjacent games.
Yeah, especially if they're holding their breath for a while.
You tried it. We also have word here that Severed, the monster slashing PS Vita game from the creators of Guacamelee, will be releasing on Wii U, 3DS, and iOS this summer. Perhaps most exciting for most of our listeners, though, will be the news that it is going to be a cross-buy game on Wii U and 3DS.
Oh, that's great.
So if you buy it on one, you'll get it on both. This is a game largely uses like a touch interface. You're like fighting monsters, and like the game is specifically trying to get you to like cut monsters in specific ways to like cut off limbs or what have you in order to lower their combat effectiveness. It's a pretty cool game. I really like the aesthetic, and I'm looking forward to this release.
That's awesome. The Virtual Console got some new gems. First off, for the 3DS, the new 3DS, in fact, exclusively, is Mega Man 7, which is the Super Nintendo iteration of Mega Man.
Yeah, you know, that's obviously a classic at this point, even if it wasn't entirely well-loved at the time.
Yeah, even if some people do say it sucks big dinosaur balls, as the saying goes. And then on the Wii U, you can pick up Super Paper Mario, which,
yes.
Paper Mario is kind of a controversy these days, but I thought Super Paper Mario was a cute game.
I agree. I liked it a lot.
And so that is available on the Wii U eShop. And last but certainly not least is for the Wii U eShop, our beloved Drill Dozer.
Yeah, that is fantastic news. Originally a Game Boy Advance game, released in 2006. It's actually made by Game Freak.
Yeah.
So it's definitely should be of a lot of interest to our listeners. But more than that, it is just an absolutely fantastic game. To me, it's a real gem, and I'm super happy it's finally gotten a virtual console release. I think everyone who can play it should play it.
Yeah, I mean, Game Freak, the rare times that they do put out a non-Pokemon game, it's always notable.
Indeed. And last, but certainly not least, of our news is word that an English translation patch is now available for the Wonderswan ROM of Rockman and Forte, Mirai Kara no Cho Sensha. And this is, of course, interesting because this was a Wonderswan exclusive sequel to Rockman and Forte. So, it's effectively a Mega Man game that most Americans have never even heard of, much less have played. I'm not super familiar with the game, although I did, I keep saying recently get a Wonderswan. I got it it was actually a year ago this month, so I should probably look into getting a cart of this. But in the meantime, if you have the means, I would highly recommend you give this a play. I actually started playing it earlier today, and so far, so good. I'm a fan, and I love when stuff like this comes up. I love when fan translations come for games that we thought we'd never get to play, and I definitely have an interest in that whole community, so definitely want to support them.
Woohoo!
Cool!
Oh wait, that's Mario. And that's a Prinny.
Alright, well then we have one more bit before we get to the discussion. Let's talk about some controversial stuff in
Controversial.
Gasp.
So the first one we have here is that word that Capcom says that certain circumstances are presently preventing a localization for The Great Ace Attorney. You may recall, of course, this is the game Dai Gyakuten Saiban. It's sort of like a Ace Attorney, but like in the past. It had very good critical and fan response in Japan when it released for the Nintendo 3DS. And unfortunately, series producer Motohide Ishiro-san talked about the game to GameSpot, saying that, you know, there are a number of circumstances in the way they absolutely want to bring Dai Gyakuten Saiban to the West, but unfortunately, right now, the circumstances are insurmountable.
That's interesting.
They do hear Western voices asking for it. You know, they remark that on live streams, even Japanese live streams, they have Western fans passionately asking for the game, And again, you know, they're very sorry. They want to bring this game to us. They just presently cannot.
Yeah, I have no idea what that could be.
Yeah, in this case, I have no idea. I can't think of anything that would get in the way in terms of licensing, like music or product placement or what have you, which are sort of typical suspects. But this is definitely unfortunate news. I'm really bummed to hear it. I'm told The Great Ace Attorney is a fantastic game, but since, you know, the fan translation scene on 3DS isn't really a thing, you know, I worry that if Capcom doesn't do the job themselves, it's just never going to get done. So I hope they can find a way to work around the circumstances, or at least communicate to us what these circumstances are, so we can, like, sort of have a sense for ourselves of just why it's so impossible. Either way, I'm really glad that they did take the time to acknowledge it. You know, between this and Square Enix on the Nintendo live stream for the Treehouse Live stuff at during E3, the Square Enix reps were very, very clear in stating that a big part of why we are getting Dragon Quest 7 and 8 for 3 DS released in North America is because of the fan effort and the fan demand. They specifically pointed out two of the big online petitions that were going around. So, you know, when you hear people say, oh, these petitions don't work, we are increasingly, time and again, hearing from developers that these petitions do in fact make a difference, and that, you know, fan demand is hugely important. So fingers crossed that Capcom will find a way to work something out with Ace Attorney. Clearly they want to. I just hope they can work it out, because you know, the fans want it, and again, you know, that is a big deal in the modern age.
Yeah. Similarly, we have word that Persona 5's Western release will not feature dual audio tracks, but they are going to look into bringing Japanese voices via DLC. This is something that with the Persona games can kind of, for some players, be a point of controversy. I feel like there was an issue with this with Persona 4 as well.
Yeah, I feel like that was an issue, but I am happy to see that, you know, John Harden over at Atlus is saying that while at launch, currently P5 will be English dub only, they are looking into Japanese voiceovers as DLC. I would expect that that would probably mean that they would have to, you know, charge for it. I don't think this would be like free DLC, but for the people who are really passionate about hearing the Japanese voices, I feel like that would be like an acceptable compromise.
Yeah, and I think for the Persona 4 thing, now that I think about it, it's that it was, you know, the original voices, because it wasn't Persona 4 Golden, and people were like, oh, I don't like Chie's old voice.
That was a whole thing. So, and last here for our controversial news, we have a statement from the developer of Allison Road, giving us a vague response as to why the popular PT clone has been cancelled. The quote is as follows. Hi all, after a long consideration between Team 17 and ourselves, we have reached a mutual agreement to end our collaboration on publishing Allison Road under Team 17's games label. Sometimes things pan out differently than expected, as game development and publishing have so many layers of complexity. We'd like to especially thank everyone for their support throughout. It has and will always be appreciated. You know, this obviously really is unfortunate. A lot of people, since the announcement of the cancellation of Allison Road, have been looking to issues with Team 17 as the likely cause. Unfortunately, that has effectively been confirmed here. We still don't really know the specific reason, and I actually kind of think it's unlikely that we ever will, but we do know that there's something between Team 17 and the Allison Road folks that were insurmountable, and as a result, that's why the game has been canceled.
Yeah, I mean, it could be anything from, like, you know, not making deadlines to, you know, certain creative control, or, like, I don't even know. It's a shame that, you know, we could have probably possibly prevented this if they had just not partnered with Team 17 and then kept their Kickstarter going. I'm sure they would have been funded.
Yeah, I really do agree with you on that, and I think it's a real shame that they did take up you know, the agreement with Team 17. I like Team 17 a lot. I'm a huge fan of their work, obviously, but clearly this was not the right call for Allison Road, and it just really sucks that it all played out like this.
Yeah.
So,
or Konami could have something to do with it.
Well, hey, I mean, who's who's to say that Konami didn't reach out to Team 17 and say this game is too similar to our product?
Even we don't know we're not
that.
Do any...
It is 100% pure speculation. I ain't trying to start rumors right now.
Even though we don't even have that product available anymore, it's still our product, and we're evil.
Well, I mean, I wouldn't even say evil, but that is, you know, a layer of Konami's how copyright evil. Works in the current system. Well, obviously. Anyway, let's move forward to our discussion here. And, you know, we're going to talk about Nintendo. And I want to start off by talking about why we didn't do an episode on Nintendo on Tuesday when all of Nintendo's stuff happened.
Because we had no idea.
Well, and that's basically true. You know, going into this, you know, the big buzz was Nintendo has already failed E3. They're only bringing one game. They have no announcements other than just talking about Zelda. As it turns out, that was not the case. If we had known how Nintendo's presence was going to progress, I would have taken the day off on Tuesday, and we would have had an episode up for y'all out there. As it is, I was incredibly impressed with Nintendo.
Yeah.
For me personally, you know, it was very controversial, the news that Zelda Breath of the Wild, as we now know it to be called, is the only game that they were bringing to present in a playable format.
Oh, that's true.
And, you know, this was a controversial move to begin with, but what we know now is that they had something like 150 kiosks set up for the game, and every day of E3, the entire day's worth of plays on all 150 units were spoken for within 30 minutes. So there was a very real thirst and a very real hunger for people to play this game. I personally no longer think that the choice to have Breath of the Wild be their only playable game was a bad idea. I think it was a fantastic idea. And if you think my excitement is surprising now, wait until we start talking about the actual game. Asai, what do you think about Nintendo's presence at E3 overall?
Yeah, you know, in some ways I'm almost glad that we're recording it now, because with the trickle of information and then allowing me to kind of reflect on it and think about the possibilities that this game's design is suggesting, I feel like I'd be able to better speak to it today. They definitely was a smart move. They knew that it was going to be a hype machine. I mean, it already was. You know, people were always already like, it was already newsworthy that, like, oh, it's the only game they're bringing. They must really believe in this. So, I mean, they were already building the hype, but, I mean, it was, worth all the hype that it was hyped. And, I mean, it's true that that was the only playable one, but I mean, on the treehouse, they had, you know, a couple other things, not a bunch, but a few notable things. And I honestly feel like what we got to see from Breath of the Wild and like the amount of time that was spent with it and the, like, you know, actually seeing it in action, I would have taken that over a direct where they're like, here's some indie titles that we're going to see. No offense to the indie titles, or like, here's another thing with Paper Mario Color Splash, you know, like, nothing against that. And even then, we did see like some treehouse time with that. I feel like if they had tried to do just a direct and then been like, oh, we'll have a little bit of Zelda, like, I feel like the fact that they focused their energy here was a smart move.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. So let's get into Zelda then. Let's start our conversation there. And Sly, why don't you explain to our listeners a little bit of sort of the point of Zelda, so to speak. Sort of, what did we learn about Breath of the Wild?
I'm like, oh, you in danger. You should have done the non-Zelda news first, because we're going to run out of time. No, I'll try to keep it.
We are 20 minutes into this episode. You literally could talk for an hour and it would be okay. Please don't talk for an hour.
Don't challenge me. So, I guess the best elevator pitch for Zelda Breath of the Wild is, in the spirit of the original Legend of Zelda game, it's very exploration based. It's focused on like survival a little more, and basically you are free to explore the world and kind of do things in whatever order you want, which includes, if you really want to, you can go to the final boss basically like within 20 minutes of loading up the game. So, you know, it's an open world, or I saw an image that said open air adventure.
Well, yeah, that's I guess what the genre that Nintendo is describing it as.
But yeah, I mean, the immediate comparisons were Zelda Scrolls Hyrim.
And something that should probably be noted, and I don't know if this was Nintendo's real goal or whatever, but open-air painting is a thing. And I've been sort of wondering if there isn't, like, some correlation. You know, open-air painting is typically when you go outside and you create your art outside doing landscapes or what have you.
Yeah, they specifically talked about that on one of the streams.
Okay, I didn't see all of the streams. There was so much content about Zelda. I watched a couple hours of it, and I still didn't see it all.
Yeah, I mean, that was specifically part of the aesthetic and why it looks kind of like a painting. Or, I mean, a lot of people are saying it looks very Studio Ghibli, which, I mean, it does. It does.
Like, that's literally the best thing I can imagine.
Yeah, so where to start? I mean, I guess we can get the story out of the way because we don't know a lot about the story. All we know right now is that Link is waking up after being in some sort of stasis for 100 years. And so that already is leading a bunch of people to be curious about, like, oh, what could that mean?
Where does it fit in the timeline?
Like, was Zelda put to sleep too? Was this a way to try and prevent Ganondorf from coming back? Who knows? But I mean, that's really the only thing story-wise we know. As we got hints of just from kind of the visual peaks we'd had before, there does seem to be a very sort of technology, but almost like a like primitive sort of looking technology, like very like runes and stuff. So like you know, kind of like a like almost, I don't know, post-apocalyptic,
but like super post-apocalyptic, like so far forward that you're basically going backwards.
So there's like this like runic magic, but also like very like archaeological sort of feel to it. And so that definitely is clear from the aesthetic and the peek we got in some of the puzzles. So, I mean, in terms of, you know, kind of what the story is or where the timeline is, you know, there's a lot of uncertainty still. The Koroks do appear, so people are like, oh, Wind Waker, but then there's other people who think, oh, it could be like a divergence of timelines, but that's really the least important thing, I think. So, you know, some of the things that we saw, I mean, one of the biggest things we saw is that in Breath of the Wild, you can pretty much, like, I'm going to get an axe, and I'm going to chop down this tree, and this tree can become a bridge, or it can become firewood. And then I'm going to go take this twig that was from the tree, and then I'm going to use that as a weapon and attack this, whatever those called, you know, those little guys.
Octoroks?
No,
Moblins? Bokoblins?
Bokoblins. Yeah, because they had a lot of Bokoblins. So I'm going to go attack a Bokoblin, and then and that Bokoblin has a club, and now I have a club. And so,
so this isn't really a elevator pitch. What you're doing right now is practically a pride parade. So
you're right. I kind of got away from the elevator pitch. You're right.
For me, the elevator pitch is really open world RPG with like actual physics simulations, environmental interactivity, and a real focus on like emergent gameplay situations.
Right.
You know, we're seeing footage in these various streams of like Link chopping down trees in order to create like little bridges to cross ravines. But this is all handled in real time by physics simulation. This isn't like, oh, I, you know, bomb this item to make this fall to create a road. Like this
and
is
it's like, do-do-do-do-do-do-do.
Exactly. Like this is actual real interactivity with the environment. You know, think Skyrim, but where you can have like a real change and impact on the environment around you rather than just, oh, you cut down this tree, now you have 6 pieces of lumber. Instead, it's like, no, you just cut down this tree, and now you can climb over it, you can pick it up with your magnet item thing and drop it on Bokoblins to kill, you know, a row of them at a time, you can set it on fire and use it to spread a fire. It's you know, a real focus on interactivity with the environment, and again, emergent solutions to sort of the typical Zelda puzzle structure.
Right.
So to me, you know, in advance of Zelda, they were all talking about how, you know, this game was going to be revolutionary. It was going to change, you know, sort of what they do and how they do it. The initial announce of Breath of the Wild, I was a little underwhelmed because it just looked like, oh, it's like Ocarina of Time, but with like a semi-open world. I have completely come around on it. For me, and this feels very weird to say, Zelda is now probably the most hyped game on my radar other than Bloodstained. And I am just, I don't even even know what to do with myself right now. This new take on Zelda to me is incredibly exciting. You know, I've heard a lot of people call it like Zelda Scrolls, which I think is hilarious. Right. But
I heard a good one, Breath of the Wild Hunt.
Ah, yes. But again, you know, this is good company that people are placing this new Zelda game with. So many different people that were at E3 gave Zelda Game of the Show award. Like a lot of the big sites. IGN gave it their Game of the Show award. So, you know, it really is looking like a watershed moment for Zelda. It looks like Nintendo is really stepping forward and advancing their game design, sort of taking those next steps to like bringing something really new to the experience.
And I just like, you know, the more that we saw like, Link went to a place where it was snowing and he doesn't have heavy enough clothes, so he's shivering and it affects his stamina and his health.
Like, and so you could like go try to find better clothes. You could go craft better clothes,
or
make a potion to give yourself a higher cold resistance.
Or if you are one of the many, gays out there, and I'm sure there's a lot of you listening, and you know, in the nicer weather you can go around and be Link without a shirt, which a lot of people were like, yes. But I mean, I think that level of thought about how the environment affects Link, like, I mean, that's like the more and more that we saw things like that, I was like, oh, that's brilliant. And it was funny because I was talking with our friend Amanda, who she was on our Party Games Games Party episode, and I imagine we're going to have her on one of these days to talk about something. But we the three of us were chatting with her on Facebook, and she was like, oh yeah, it kind of makes me think of like the red tunic from Ocarina of Time. I'm like, that's a good point. Like, they kind of did play with that idea even back then, but this is like really an evolution of that.
Well, exactly. And that to me is what's so interesting about it, is we really are seeing a lot of previous Zelda concepts and tropes being really revolutionized to go like next level in terms of game design.
Yeah,
and
you know, Skyward Sword kind of played with like the crafting thing and durability. You know, the one thing we didn't mention yet was that like items will have stats, so you'll have like an armor and attack. I mean, it's not like a full RPG. Like,
you say that, but in many ways, I would argue that it is.
Well, I mean, I don't. As far as I know, I don't think there's like intellect, you know, so I mean like RPG stats, but I mean the fact with like weapon damage and armor and stuff, so it's definitely RPG-ish.
And you're saying it like that, but not all RPGs have, you know, all of the stats that we think of.
I mean, it's not a JRPG, so.
Again, you know, I'm not quite sure I agree.
I mean.
We have armor and gear with stats, you know, the game has a whole like loot system, basically. Weapons have durability, you can get them repaired. It has a whole crafting system. I think it's the closest Zelda has come to real RPG territory in its lifetime. Obviously, requisite shout out to Zelda 2, which also had a lot of JRPG conventions, obviously. But I think this is the closest Zelda has ever been to like full-fledged RPG status. And I think that is a fantastic choice for Nintendo and for Zelda. I didn't think in advance of this show that Zelda could be something I would be this excited for. And now here I am, I'm like counting down the days.
Yeah, and I think it was really, I mean, they knew what they were doing, so I'm sure that I'm sure that most of it was motivated by, you know, really wanting to do something fresh and, you know, provide a good experience, but I'm sure there was also a very calculated part of it to try and attract the audience of things like Elder Scrolls and Witcher, which, you know, like Witcher 3 got so much Game of the Year, so, I mean, lots of people have a thirst for this type of game, so I think that especially having it as an NX launch title, you know, will really be a good way to, you know, position that as a must have.
And man, you know, I gotta say, it feels now like the NX is gonna come out swinging. And it's really funny, you know, Ubisoft had said during the conference that they are, you know, they think that the NX is gonna be huge. They see Nintendo regaining the Wii audience with this. And it's hard to come away from Breath of the Wild not thinking that that's at least possible. Really, the thing is, you know, Breath of the Wild, it was shown at E3 on the GameCube, on the Wii U, and it was beautiful. It was beautiful. If it's going to look even better on NX, that's going to be bonkers. And the thing is, another thing, and I want to talk about this because Zelda was shown on the Wii U, but the gamepad wasn't actively used. We had some of the designers at Nintendo talking about how they felt that, you know, having to use the gamepad, use the second screen is a distraction from the game, and that they didn't want that for Zelda. They had specifically said, you know, that they had some ideas for using the gamepad, and they ended up removing all of them and integrating them into just a single screen game experience. Ignoring that, for me, that makes me think that maybe the NX is not going to have a second screen after all. Given the direction they're going with it, I'm not mad about this. I had previously indicated that Zelda without second screen, I would have no interest in. But if we're taking a completely different approach and having, you know, full on like gear screens with stats and everything, and it's not just a simple what item am I currently equipped with, I actually feel like it's okay not to have a second screen for that.
Especially like, oh, I'm in the water temple. I need to use the iron boots. Now I need to take the iron boots off. Now I need to put the iron boots back on. I mean, and even then, if there is a puzzle like that, I mean, I'm sure that there's some sort of like a, you know, shortcut key that you could, I mean, there have been in like, you know, a lot of the Zeldas as well, but.
Yeah, my thing is, it definitely seems like Nintendo has learned some of their lessons with the way they did approach that kind of thing in the 3DS remake of Ocarina of Time, for example. So it does seem like Nintendo's aware of these issues and how cumbersome these UIs can be. And that, for me, I guess, now that I have more information on Breath of the Wild, that for me is really the focus, that they know that this is cumbersome. They know their audience, or at least some of their audience, doesn't like how cumbersome these elements can be.
Right. And I mean, so, the thing about the 3D Zelda games, and I mean, I guess honestly, it even comes back to A Link to the Past, even though that wasn't a 3D Zelda game, you know, it kind of set the structure for something like Ocarina of Time. The thing about the 3D Zelda games, though, in particular, with the maybe slight exception of Majora's Mask, which, you know, played around with a lot of ideas, was you would be, you know, kind of forced to go somewhere because of the story. And I mean, like, that seems like it's been completely abandoned. Like, the other thing being that there's pretty much was only like one solution to a puzzle. Like, oh, I've got to figure out that I've got to use my arrow there. Now I've got to try to time it right. Like, if the fact that they're trying to focus on emergent gameplay and, you know, really you trying to, you know, look at the environment around you. I mean, this is everything that I was hoping the new Zelda would be in, like, even stuff I really didn't even think about.
Right? Like, this will be the first Zelda where it will really truly be possible to, like, complete puzzles in ways that the game designers didn't intend. And that, to me, is very exciting. I'm happy to have a Zelda experience that is less guided, I guess is what it really comes down to, and why I'm so excited.
Right. I mean, you know, it's getting a lot of comparisons to Zelda 1, but I mean, even with Zelda 1, yes, you could do dungeons out of order, but you still needed the ladder to get to, you know, certain things in level 4, and you still needed the raft to get to level 4 or whatever. So, I mean, there was still a certain order that you kind of had to do things in. With the what we know about the dungeons, I don't know if this was a definite number. They said there's going to be about 4 dungeons. I don't know. Was that a definite, concrete number?
You know, I kept hearing around 4.
But then that there will be about 100 little
shrines.
And from what we saw of them, you know, they're going to be, like, you know, still very puzzle-based, like what we're used to.
Like, tight-focused chunks of game design.
And I really like...
Similar to what I've been likening them to.
Yeah.
Because we actually saw a gameplay of a couple of these shrines. I'm likening them to the assassin tombs in Assassin's Creed, where you just have, like, a small little mini-dungeon that is, like, very, like, laser-focused on, like, one aspect of, like, the gameplay and the gameplay flow. And it looks like that's the route that Breath of the Wild is going, but that there will be be more than 100 of those kinds of experiences.
And that's awesome.
And that, to me, sounds fantastic.
I loved those Assassin's Tombs, especially that they were focused on just puzzle. Like, that's something that I thought was really a lot of fun and well-designed in those games. And that, I mean, because I tried to limit what I watched once I started getting super hyped, because I want to mostly be surprised. But, you know, I also wanted to be informed enough. Did they show any enemies in the shrines?
Yes.
Oh, so there are still enemies in
there. There will be shrines that have combat focus.
But, I mean, that's interesting to, you know, see how they're going to be different than, you know, the actual dungeons.
Well, I assume the dungeons will be like the Twilight Princess dungeons, where, you know, it's like these huge environments with, you know, like multi-segmented, like real big puzzles and challenges. You know, those Twilight Princess dungeons, and I have said this all along, even with all the stuff I dislike about Twilight Princess, some of those dungeons are just fantastic. And the idea that sort of I got from watching these streams and listening to them talk about it is that the dungeons are going to be these big events that are going to be like multiple environmental set pieces and, you know, big puzzles. And then the shrines are going to be like the smaller, like, focus sets of gameplay. And that, to me, sounds like a really great middle ground. And, you know, to me, I guess my thing is somehow Nintendo is making an open world game that also still feels like laser focused on what it wants to do. And I think it's a very interesting tightrope they're walking that I'm really eager to see if they can nail it the way they seem to be.
Yeah.
I think that's everything I wanted to say about Zelda. We've been talking about it for like 20 minutes. Do you have anything else you want to say about Zelda, Slaggy?
No, nothing that would be, you know, just beyond speculation. And I don't think anyone really wants to hear about like my lore thoughts about it, so...
Ah, yeah, lore talk I'd prefer to stay away from. I know we're going to have a couple of listeners who are going to be like, I want to hear Slagkick's lore thoughts. So we will almost certainly be doing a Breath of the Wild focused episode. We may end up doing multiple of them. You know, now that we record a little more regularly than we used to, we're pretty solidly on this every other week thing. I expect we will do multiple Breath of the Wild focused episodes. And if that doesn't tell you how hyped for this game is, I don't know what possibly could.
Yeah, just it won't be until next spring, sorry.
Oh,
I mean, unless we get another, you know, big reveal.
Well, if we get like a direct about it in like December or something, then we would probably do a focus episode around then, like, oh, what, yeah, we, yeah, know so far. All right, well then, let's talk about non-Zelda news. But, funny enough, we're actually going to start that conversation by talking about Zelda stuff. Nintendo also at E3 announced multiple new series of amiibo. The first set of amiibo is a Breath of the Wild set. It is going to have two Links. One is Archer Link and one is Rider Link, as well as the Guardian. The Guardian, of course, being the robotic-looking, like, octopus sentinel.
It almost looked like a Goma to me.
Yeah, well, to me, I was thinking like a Goma with like Dr. Octopus robot legs.
Right.
So I definitely think this is actually a Goma. I agree with you. It has the whole single eye thing, even though this eye appears to be a blue laser. Oh, maybe. Oh, man. Does that mean there's going to be a giant one of these that is a Goma?
I hope so.
Oh, that'd be amazing. I'd be so into that.
Were Tektites supposed to be little Gomas?
That's always how I saw their sprites, but I don't know that that's really what they're supposed to be.
That's interesting.
Either way,
now I'm just thinking of the Zelda 1 commercial. Levers!
We also learned,
oh man,
in
do you
fact,
think they'll be levers?
We like, also learned levers? That the other Zelda character amiibo will have effects in Breath of the Wild. And the one that they showed us was using the Midna and Wolf Link amiibo to actually open up a Twilight Realm portal in Breath of the Wild to bring Wolf Link down into the game world. We don't quite know exactly what he does. And a lot of people are asking about if that's canon, you know, that Wolf Link can appear in this world. Either way, though, definitely some exciting stuff going on there.
Yeah.
As for the other amiibo lineups, we also have Super Mario coming. This is going to be hitting in November. It's Super Mario Series 2, and it is going to have Wario, Waluigi, Daisy, Rosalina, Boo, Donkey Kong, and Diddy Kong. And something really cute about the Boo amiibo is that it's actually going to glow in the dark, which is going to be adorable. And I am so freaking happy we're going to get a Waluigi amiibo.
You've been waiting.
I have been. I really have been. And then the last set they talked about is actually already available. In fact, I have them all. They reiterated that the Kirby line is now in stores. So
yeah,
if you're...
Those Kirby figures are so cute.
Oh, they really are. They're actually some of my favorite amiibo. Like Kirby on his little star is super cute. Waddle Dee with his little like running clouds is super adorable. Dedede is always great. And the metallic paint they used on Meta Knight looks sick.
Yeah, I'm sure Meta Knight would be pretty stabby if he knew we called him cute.
You're probably right. Like some weird flying stabby bat thing.
Yeah.
Let's see. We also mentioned, you know, Ubisoft and GameStop both indicated that they thought the NX was going to be huge. We got the new announcement of a new Nintendo IP that is going to be a JRPG. This is Ever Oasis. It's coming to the 3DS. It's being developed by Grezzo. You might be familiar with Grezzo. They worked on a lot of the Street Pass games on 3DS.
Yeah, those were pretty great.
And they handled both of the 3D remakes of the Nintendo 64 Zeldas for 3DS.
That's right.
So the Grezzo guys, you know, they have a lot of talent over there. This is going to be great. It's being produced by Koichi Ishii-san, who's probably best known for directing the first three Final Fantasy games, as well as most of the Mana series. So Ever Oasis, in a lot of ways, actually looks like sort of an evolution of the Mana series. It's going to have some of like the management sim type gameplay that we saw in like Legend of Mana, where you're sort of creating like the city and the game world that you're playing in to some degree. In this case, you'll be building out your oasis in order to attract people from other tribes, and you know they'll help you craft new gear and weapons and stuff. And in that way, it's very similar to Secret of Mana. It also is going to be a single player game, three character party, which you know you'll be selecting and changing between these three characters depending on who has the best skills for what inside a given dungeon. Definitely seems like a successor to that Mana series gameplay that we all love so much. So I am beyond hyped for this game, Ever Oasis. Cannot wait to hear more about it. I hope it's coming soon because I really want to play it.
Yeah, it was super good.
We also got word of a new Mario Party. Slaggy, do you want to talk about the new Mario Party?
Yeah, this is called Mario Party Star Rush. You might have seen some memes on the internet about this because the cover art, which I don't even know if it's the final cover art, but the cover art borrows art assets from a Mario-themed SpaghettiOs can.
Yes.
And my thing is like, so what? It's their art assets. But, you know...
So what? They're still a rock star.
I mean, something about the cover anyways is that it looks like it's just not final, but who cares? So the thing about Mario Party Star Rush is that all players will be able to play at the same time. They showed off on the Treehouse stream. They only showed one mode so far, which is called Toad Scramble. So everyone plays as a toad, and what you do is you all roll the dice, and it's kind of like, instead of being a game board, it's more like a... I mean, I don't want to say it's like a strategy RPG, but I mean, kind of is.
Almost know, like a roguelike map. It's like grid-based. Your movement that you roll on your dice represents the number of squares on the grid.
And you have to move that number of spaces, which is an interesting twist.
Indeed, but like a roguelike almost, you can go in little like circuitous paths in case you want to end up on a specific square.
Right. So
which is interesting to me.
So they showed a couple of things. Some things were like, you know, you can get special items,
recruit other Nintendo characters,
right? So you can recruit
Mario
other...
series Nintendo characters,
right? So that's what the, you know, Mario amiibo series, you know, is to tie in with, is these new characters. So you can,
which also means Waluigi in this game. Yes.
So basically you're kind of like recruiting them to your team almost, which is kind of cute. And then there's also mini bosses. So like they showed an example of like some of the players were trying to recruit people, but then one of them was being kind of rude and was like, I'm just gonna go to the mini boss. And so then they you know, so once someone gets to the mini boss, that kind of starts the mini boss battle or whatever. It just looks like a fun, fresh take on Mario Party. You know, some of the recent Mario Party games have been really lacking, and you know, kind of took out some of the things that a lot of us really liked about Mario Party. So this seems like a great experience, especially as an approach for a handheld Mario Party. I didn't play Island Tour or Party DS. I mean, I heard that they were both okay, but, you know, I'm just hoping that this means it's a in some ways, a return to form. I mean, obviously, they rethought it for the, you know, approach of being a handheld Mario Party, but I mean, just there's something about Mario Party 10 that just really left a sour taste in my mouth.
You know, I'm really excited about Star Rush. I actually can't wait for this game. It's going to be releasing October 7th in North America. I'm really excited for that. I'm really excited because, to me, it's going to be the first portable Mario Party that has taken the fact that it's a portable game into consideration in its design. You know, playing like Island Tour, what have you, and like having to wait for your turn, even though you're on a 3DS, like you're portable, you have your own screen, and you're just sitting there doing nothing while other people take their turns. It's just not great from a design standpoint to me. So I'm really excited about Star Rush because I feel like it's taking its platform into consideration, modifying its game design to suit that platform, and I think it's going to be a better game for it. My first Mario Party party.
Mario Party party. I mean, as if you haven't had Mario Party parties before.
I mean, my first Mario Party Star Rush party party.
Yeah, I think Star Rush says it all. I just imagine like me trying to be like, oh, where am I going to go? And then Captain Spike's like, oh, too late. I already grabbed that thing that you were after.
Yeah, right. It's going to add like a real competitive element that I think is going to be really fun.
And like they were on the Treehouse stream, they were trying to narrate what they were going to do. But then the other players were like, oh, now I know what you're going to do. So they're like, oh, I mean, I'm not going to do that. So it was really cute because they were getting really competitive and like to the point where they wanted to narrate what they were doing for the people at home, but they're like, oh, actually, I'm not going to say what I'm going to do.
But again,
it's
hilarious.
Like it's actually like a strategy element into instead of just like, oh, it's my turn next, and oh, Captain Spike got a 2-for-1 dice, and so he's gonna get to the star first, you know, which there's nothing wrong with the traditional Mario Party gameplay. I think it'll be a really fun approach.
Yeah, I completely agree. I'm really excited for this game. Let's see. We also had the announcement that Paper Mario Color Splash for Wii U will be releasing October 7th. The game still looks glorious. Many people were upset to discover it's not going to be an RPG the way that Paper Mario Thousand Year Door was. But, you know, Nintendo pretty openly stated that they feel that the Mario and Luigi series on 3DS is the successor to that Paper Mario, and they're trying to do, you know, different and experimental fun things with the Paper Mario series proper. And I can't really disagree with that. I think trying new things is good. I think the game looks fun, and I'm interested in checking it out. For those of you out there who do not feel the same, you know, that's obviously okay. It's okay to not like stuff. I'm just hopeful, yeah. You know, they indicated that they would be open to doing a Thousand Year Door HD remaster at some point if there's fan demand.
Oh my gosh, so many people would be down.
Well, they basically said, you know, if you want this, let us know, because if there's fan demand, they would do it. And I hope they do. I would love it if, like, NX also launched with Thousand Year Door remastered. Like, I think a lot of people would be interested in that product.
Right. And I mean, they did think they did Paper Jam too. So I mean, you know, they're listening.
Yeah, absolutely. We also got a surprise release of Rhythm Heaven Mega Mix. This is, of course, the North American release of Rhythm Tengoku The Best Plus. It is an eShop exclusive in North America, so they were able to do a surprise release. It'll be releasing next month in Europe, where it will be released both digitally and at retail in physical format. We also got word that Pokemon Go, both the game and the Pokemon Go Plus accessory is currently slated to release in July. The Plus accessory will basically sync to your phone via Bluetooth, and when you are like in an area that has a Pokemon you don't have already, it'll start like vibrating to let you know to pull your phone out.
Oh my.
As I understand it, that sounds really great, and you know, I've already pre-ordered it. The Plus accessory, you can get it on Amazon. I think it's like $30 or something. The game itself will be free to play. So
yeah, I think that from what I gathered, I didn't watch too much of the stream. Again, I kind of want to go into it organically, but I think just from the impressions that I'm getting and from the hints that are being dropped by people who may or may not be in the alpha or whatever, or is it a beta at this point?
They're calling it field test.
Field test. That if you're expecting a traditional Pokemon experience, it's not going to be exactly that. But I'm still hype. You know, we do know there's going to be some sort of interactivity with the games. And if that means, like, I go outside the SS Game Buoy, and, like, you know, Captain Spike and I are gonna go to Panera Bread, and we see a Meowth in the bushes, that we can be like, oh, let's catch that Meowth, and then bring it over to our game.
I think that's
just amazing.
Yeah, that's fantastic. And last, but definitely not least, we also got word that the 3DS port of Dragon Quest VII, after so many years of waiting, will be releasing in North America on September 16th.
Wow.
Yeah. It feels like a long nightmare finally ending. So that wraps it up for Nintendo. Overall, Saigi, what did you think?
About Nintendo's?
About Nintendo's presence at E3, yeah.
Yeah.
To the degree that I know we talked a little bit about that at the beginning of this discussion, but now would be the time to wrap it up.
Yeah, I think that it was a really smart approach. I mean, the only thing that was really different to me, I mean, not being at E3 and having never attended E3, was that we didn't get a Direct. That was Indeed. The only thing that I really felt. I mean, I guess it would have felt different had I, you know, known what Nintendo, being at Nintendo's E3 experience was before. But I mean, I really feel like it was probably appropriate given the scale of the game and, you know, what a big deal this game is and how important this is going to be for their success. Like, I feel like last year's kind of focused on Mario Maker and they had a lot of kiosks for that. But, you know, Mario Maker wasn't the, you know, their future wasn't hinging on the success of Mario Maker. So, I mean, I feel like from a business standpoint, it made a lot of sense, and I'm really happy with what we got. It's funny because I've read some, you know, of the various things on, you know, the different sites, and one site that you linked me to was saying that the only negatives were that basically they didn't announce Mother 3 for a Western release. So, I mean, the fact that, you know, that's something that, you know, we've been waiting for forever, you know, and was not teased or promised or anything. And
there were rumors about it, which a lot of people have really strong faith in.
Okay, yeah, I mean, I think that it was smart because everyone's talking about Zelda. I feel like if they had, you know, been like, oh, we're going to have Federation Force playable kiosks, then people would have been like, oh, I want real Metroid, you know. By focusing on a smaller amount of games, I think it really allowed us to see, oh, and we didn't even talk about, not that there's too much to talk about, they also did start out their conference with a closer look at Pokemon Sun and Moon. So we got a couple new Pokemons. One looks like Donald Trump, basically. Young Goose. Some other, like, a really cute Burb. I feel like there was one other one that we saw, like a bug type, maybe. Like, I'm not remembering right now, but yeah, so we saw some new Pokemon too, and so that's something that's exciting as well.
Yeah, it really is. Overall, I thought Nintendo did a great job. You know, I always say that going to E3 is not as great as it's typically cracked up to be, but in this one case now, Zelda makes me wish I had gone.
Well, if you'd had a way to go.
A good friend of mine actually did go, and he played Zelda. He waited in line for 6 hours to do it, but he got to do it, and I'll be honest, listening to him talk about playing it, I am so effing jealous.
Yeah, we would have been like, the first day we would have been like, oh, we totally got in line too late, so we would have been like, okay, Captain Spike would have been like, okay, First Mate Sidekick, here's what we're gonna do. We're gonna go right now to the Walgreens, load up on snacks, and we're gonna wait in line, even if we're waiting 8 hours. Are you in? And I'm like, duh.
Yeah, that's exactly what would happen.
I just hope that they will bring a E3, at this point it won't be an E3 experience, but I would love if they do a Direct and then do a Best Buy experience again. I would do that for Zelda Scrolls.
Yeah, I think that would be a really appropriate thing for them to do, and I'm almost surprised they didn't, but I guess I'm really not. It was such a big deal, and them sort of managing how many people have played it really does give them some amount of control on the word of mouth, which is now so overwhelmingly positive they can crank it up, but, you know, they didn't know how the reception was going to be until it happened, so I think the way they handled it was perfect. Anyway, let's overall sum up E3 2016 and then start wrapping this episode up. What did you think overall this year, Slaggy, E3 2016?
I feel overall, aside from EA having some real disappointments in their presentation, I thought it was a really solid one. I feel like there maybe weren't as many OMG moments as there were at E3 2015.
Yeah, but let's be fair, a lot of those E3 2015 moments are still checks that have yet to be cashed. You know, we got the big announcement of Shenmue 3, we got the big announcement of of Final Fantasy VII Remake. We got the big announcement of Last Guardian still in development and coming out in 2016. None of these things have released, nor have we even seen much of any of them. So I've heard a lot of people say, oh, E3 2016 wasn't as good as 2015. But for me, the flip side of that is that a lot of what we saw in 2015, like Year of Dreams or whatever, sure, but it's all still unfulfilled promises, really. They gave us a lot of promises that without a whole lot of substance. Whereas I feel like in 2016, we saw an increased focus on like actual games being played, games that are in a playable state to show off.
Right.
And, you know, as much as I complain that EA didn't give us more Mass Effect, if it's not ready to show, it's not ready to show. And I'd probably rather be told, oh, we will have info for you this fall, rather than be showed a CG trailer that ultimately has no bearing on what the game is like.
Right.
So overall, my thought was actually that 2016 was a pretty good year for E3. And, you know, part of it is that Zelda hype has me so strong. I am absolutely in the thrall right this moment. So definitely hard to work around. You know, we also got word that we're going to be getting an HD port of the original Phantom Dust. That's huge news for me personally. You know, that's going to be a great game experience. There was a lot of stuff for me personally that was very interesting and exciting coming out of E3 this year. Overall, if now that we've had everything, what company do you think did best in terms of their presentation?
That's really tough. I want to give it to Nintendo, but I mean, Nintendo's wasn't really a conference. So I almost feel like Nintendo's like a side note. Not a side note, but I mean, like, I almost feel like I can't compare Nintendo to the other ones. So if I'm looking at just the other conferences, like the, you know, more traditional ones, I honestly would have a hard time picking between Sony and Ubisoft.
Yeah. Yeah, I would largely agree with that. I think that Ubi and Sony both did great. I would actually consider Nintendo ahead of both of them, except Nintendo didn't do a conference, like you say. We've said in... Was this the second year or third year that they've done Treehouse Live all day?
I feel like this is the third year.
You know, I've said all along that, like, doing this Treehouse Live all day stream thing for Nintendo has been a very unique asset that they've leveraged remarkably well. I don't get why everyone isn't doing it, although this year we saw Square Enix doing something very similar.
Right.
So, you know.
No, it definitely has been more than just these 2 years, because Iwata-san was not part of the presentations last year, as we recall.
Okay, so it's really interesting to me, though, that, you know, we remark that Nintendo didn't have a conference, but their presentation of streaming all day, and in this year, you know, they streamed primarily around one software title, but the presentation, between the quality of the presentation and the quality of that software,
I mean, you know, you get Shigeru Miyamoto-san coming out and talking about stuff. You have Aonuma-san, who's, like, you know, really come into his own as, you know, being able to be like kind of the authority in Zelda.
Yeah, so you know, I still do in a way feel that Nintendo did the most in terms of presentation.
Yeah.
So I you know, I would have to say Nintendo, Ubi, Sony, possibly in that order. My big thing with Sony is that, you know, especially the further away we get from their actual conference, the more obvious it is that there was something wrong or something they changed at the last minute. It just ended up not flowing super well, and
ending
anticlimactically.
Maybe they had a whole half hour devoted to the Vita, and then oops.
If there were a half hour of Vita content, I think they would be celebrating.
Poor Vita. poor Vita.
All right. I feel like I know the answer to this question without asking, but I have to ask, what is your game of show?
Battlefield 1.
Hey, some of our listeners might be very excited for Battlefield 1.
And they have the right to. I mean, obviously, Zelda Breath of the Wild. I mean, how could it not be?
Yeah, I'm right there with you, actually. It surprises the pants off of me, but it is what it is.
I saw a lot of people saying that, you know, Horizon Zero Dawn, is that what's called, Zero Dawn?
Yes.
Horizon Zero Dawn and Zelda Breath of the Wild are going to be, like, probably the 2017 GOTY contenders.
Yeah,
a lot of people,
you know, it's really
have a lot of faith in Horizon.
It's really funny that this is really the second time this has happened, because we had a very similar situation when Twilight Princess released, and, you know, we had Okami as well. And so they were sort of put up against each other as, like, very similar games. Wolf, World Exploration Wolf. Adventure. So, well, and they play very similarly. They're very mechanically similar. So, you know, it's very interesting that we're going to have that again with Breath of the Wild and Horizon.
Except this time it's a Zelda game that looks like a painting.
Fair, I suppose. Let me ask then, because it probably goes without saying that the game you're most excited for is Game of Show, but other than that, what are your other two or three most anticipated titles you saw this year?
I'm really excited to see more. Just, I mean, this is kind of a cheating answer. Like, a lot of the Ubisoft stuff, I was actually really excited about. Watch Dogs 2, was it Steep or Slope, or what was that game? I'm totally drawing a blank.
Steep
looks really interesting. Fractured Butthole actually looks really fun. Freaking Badass Girl and Her Daddy. Oh, Dishonored 2. I'm just having a brain fart here. Horizon Zero Dawn, although that was kind of a last year E3. And, I mean, Pokemon is obvious. That kind of doesn't count.
Yeah. Let's see. I have a real excitement for, obviously, for, like, the Phantom Dust HD port. It's not a remaster, it's a port, but that's all right. I'm really excited for the Spider-Man PS4 game. Obviously, I'm super excited for whatever Resident Evil 7 turns out to be. Death Stranding is one I can't wait to see more of.
Oh, and the theories are already starting.
Oh, yeah, and you know, Kojima-san is fanning the flames. He's basically saying there's a ton in that trailer that no one online has figured out yet, and the game is afoot. He has literally said the game is afoot.
You've already started playing the game.
Yeah, so, you know, I'm really excited for all of that stuff. I think, you know, this is going to be another really great year. Dead Rising 4, I'm super stoked for. I love those Dead Rising games. So I'm stoked. I thought this was a great E3. Do you have any other, any closing thoughts?
You know, just that I hope that E3 2017 will have some things from people we haven't heard of in a while, like that game company. I'd love to know what they're working on.
Studios over for Nintendo.
I feel like we kind of know what Cappy is working on, right?
They're still working on Below, right?
Yeah, but I'd like to see what's coming after that.
But yeah, no, that is definitely what I'd like to see next year is updates from the companies we haven't heard from in a while.
And I'd really like to hear from, and I really want to hear from Night School Studio, see what's next, you know, whether that's in the Oxenfree world or not, because, you know, I mean, Oxenfree, I mean, I almost feel like we should do an episode at some point. There's all sorts of hints that
like in October.
Ooh, that would be super good. That there's some sort of alternate reality game going on with it, and that we don't know nearly anything about the depth of that yet. So
that's exciting.
Which also makes me wonder if that's kind of what's going on with Death Stranding, if there's going to be like alternate reality elements too.
Alternate reality? Do you mean augmented reality?
I've heard the terms used interchangeably, maybe incorrectly.
Oh, okay.
But you know, like real world things that connect.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, anyway, let's wrap this up. That's about it for our conversation, unless you have any other last thoughts.
Nope.
All right, well then, let's start winding down by talking about what we've been playing. Or, as we say, what's up?
I said, hey, what's going on?
So I have been playing a handful of games. I've been playing a lot of World of Warcraft and a lot of Overwatch. Obviously, both are still super good. I have my current character I'm leveling in WoW, my monk, is now in the Warlords of Draenor content. I'm really enjoying it still. I still think the content that was there for Warlords of Draenor was fantastic. There just isn't nearly enough of it. Overwatch continues to be really great, learning more about how to actually play the game and stuff rather than just running around and doing my best, like as far as like where choke points are on maps and like how to work as a team. So definitely that's coming along. I've also been playing a lot of Project Cross Zone 2, and something really funny, one of my good friends on Twitter pointed this out to me. The script for the localization is actually fantastic. It's really funny, it's really insightful, and it's really self-aware, and it actually makes the game like a real joy to play, even though you know, the combat system at this point, it's been reused from Namco Cross Capcom, Project Cross Zone, stuff like Cross Edge, which
ew.
You know, the game battle system is a little tired at this point, but the localization is like so clever that it's still fun to play. So I actually consider that a really good success, and I actually would recommend the game. I've seen it on like fire sale level prices on Amazon in particular recently. Like one day it was going for like $14 new. So I would definitely recommend someone who's interested in strategy RPGs and Japanese characters by, you know, Capcom, Namco, and Sega to look into it.
Interesting.
What about you, Saggy? What have you been playing?
Mostly Overwatch and World of Warcraft. I guess it kind of counts. I picked up The Sims 4 on the Origin sale. Origin had a pretty good sale going on that by the time you hear this, maybe may not be active anymore, but you know, I don't know how long they have it planned for. I haven't gotten past the Create a Sim yet because I just had so much, I'm gonna say have so much fun, but I've been so caught up in looking at the different options and just the level of customization you could do, and the patch that enabled, you know, different gender expressions and stuff is in the game, and I'm really impressed with the way that it was implemented in the Create a Sim. I can't speak to the in-game parts of it, but basically they, you know, you choose the, you know, the biological sex of your sim. I'm not trying to, you know, be like cisgendered minded here, but you know, so you choose, like, you know, what the physical body of your sim is, I guess is one way you could say that, and then you could say, you know, if they prefer
like their expression preferences,
like if they prefer feminine or masculine clothing, if they are able to get other sims pregnant, or if they're able to have babies, I think is the way they phrased it, and also if they can use the bathroom standing up. So I mean, instead of like, you know, I thought it was very tastefully done. But then there also are things like, you know, when you were doing your you choose the way that your sim walks, so you can have a goofy walk or like kind of like a swagger walk, and I don't know if this was available before, but you can have a male sim with a feminine walk.
And so you're basically describing a game that's like 6 months old as if it were new.
Well, but some of the features just hit. You know, okay. We reported about them. And so, you know, I had a lot of fun just playing around with the different, you know, features. And I mean, I haven't even actually played yet. So I'm really looking forward to seeing. I know that there's been a lot of complaints about that, oh, it doesn't have this and this and this and this feature that were in The Sims 3. But I mean, those things were all added over time, so I mean, I guess maybe they could have been in, but you know, I'm just looking forward to having fun with Sims. I'm hoping that I can convince Captain Spike to start playing Sims and kind of get him into the wackiness of that, because there's definitely some crazy things that people have done with Sims that are, you know.
Yeah, we had a reader request for a Sims buoy, so it's gonna happen, and I'm gonna have to take the dive. So it'll happen,
because my understanding is you played Sims 1 for a little bit, right?
1 and 2, yeah.
Did you ever like torture them?
No, why would, no,
I mean, but like it doesn't have to be like your actual Sims, you just do it just to experiment.
That sounds sociopathic. Like,
yeah, wait until we Sims buoy.
Oh, I'm terrified.
I'm not the only one who's done it, okay?
That's fine, but you know, I no, not even little robotic simulations of people. I'm not torturing them.
I'll ask you a clarifying question off air.
Son of a gun.
Otherwise, that's been about it, but looking forward to spending some more 3DS time, because Box Box Boy is out now, right? Box Box Boy, Box Boy 2, which they're calling Box Box Boy.
Actually, it'll be releasing on June 30th. They did announce it at E3 that Box Boy 2 would be coming over as Box Box Boy, and that will be releasing on the North American eShop June 30th.
For some reason, I thought it was still up, but kind of, because there's been a lot of stuff that's like, oh, now, or soon, so, yeah, I'm looking forward to...
Yeah, you might have gotten a little mixed up, because the one that they did the surprise release for was Rhythm Heaven.
Tengoku, yeah. So, I mean, that'll be a good one, because that looks, oh my god.
Excellent. All right, well, unless you have any other games you've been playing that you want to talk about, it might be time for you to dive into those social links.
Yeah. So, our first one, or actually, our first proper tweet came from VogNetwork.com at the VogNetwork Twitter. They said, check out GameBuies.org's E3 recaps today at 3 Pacific, 6 Eastern on our station, immediately followed by an E3 edition of ESH News, Electric Sisterhood.
Yes.
So, I mean, that's obviously a little bit outdated, but thank you for the shout out. We have a tweet from Your Enzyme on the 14th saying Zelda's Creed.
Right.
There was just a little bit of tweeting, mostly between Captain Spike and I, about how I was hoping that I wouldn't end up doing Zelda speculation buoy, but Your Enzyme said, we want your thoughts.
Twitter's like,
and with that, we go into our actual question of the week, which was, this week we wrap up E3 with a look at Nintendo's presentations and other news to come out of the conference. What are your thoughts? And then our bonus was asking, now that we've seen Legend of Zelda Breath of the Wild, do you agree with Nintendo's decision to focus almost exclusively on that game? So our first tweet in regards to kind of the E3 wrap-up comes from ActDeft, saying the big three made solid showings. Probably the best thing in the whole show was seeing Kojima actually happy. Aw, right?
That's super sweet. Yeah, I totally agree.
Twitter user Jason Hobson saying, I mean, it does look really cool, referring to Zelda, but I was hoping for some NX news. And then that emoji that I love, or the emoticon rather, because it's not emoji, of the shrugging, kind of like, eh. So yeah, I mean, I definitely thirst for NX news as well. Your Enzyme saying, in response to ActDeft, seriously, Kojima smiles and he looks so much younger. Your Enzyme also saying, I really liked what the big three brought to E3, but I think Nintendo messed up not showing the NX. They bet on Sony showing the Neo and Microsoft showing more Scorpio, and I think it backfired. Nintendo's live streams were so incredibly dull. As soon as the initial Zelda reveal was over, I stopped watching. But Pokemon Sun and Moon look like hot garbage, and I'm not talking about Trubbish. Right after the reveal, I would have said yes, but after a day, I wanted to see more from them, and not just more basic explanation of how Pokemon works. That game hasn't changed in almost 20 years. Please stop, Nintendo. And I mean, I understand that. I feel like kind of the Pokemon coverage was in a lot of ways basic, but I appreciated the quality of life changes that they are implementing. Like, you can see the buffs and stuff, and the new UI looks really sleek. And just fresh off the press, recording on a Saturday, is this episode going to go live earlier? You don't have to read this on air. So, yes, we are recording. I will be out of town for a few days, so that's the primary reason. But we also wanted to get, you know, this E3 week wrapped up for you, so...
Yeah, yeah. We actually will have this episode uploaded a little earlier than usual as well. For this very rare occasion, we are not going to wait to upload at the same time as the episode goes live on VOG Network. We do still, of course, suggest that you support us on VOG Network if that's where you usually listen. But, you know, this should be listenable online on what, Saturday night, Sunday morning?
Yep.
Awesome.
And going over to Facebook to answer the question of the week, we have first from Colin M., saying, I think until they officially show the NX, Zelda is really the only game they can talk about. Their fall lineup is probably going to be pretty slim. I hope they're saving up for a big NX launch with key titles like New 3D Mario, Pikmin 4, and Mario Kart 9.
And, you know, we actually did get a little bit of an update on the next 3D Mario. It's apparently going to be an all-new concept. And,
oh, boy.
They actually had said that we'll probably be hearing more about that at E3 2017. So that is actually, I don't think, going to be a launch title. I do think we're going to see it launch with Pikmin 4. I actually, you know, I see a lot of people saying that, you know, we didn't get any NX news, but I feel like we got a lot of NX sort of information by proxy.
Wink, wink, nod, nod.
Well, yeah, exactly. Stuff like, you know, they disincentivized gamepad stuff on Zelda makes me think that the NX probably doesn't have second screen, a mandatory. So, yeah. You know, I do feel like we got some hints.
And maybe we can do like a micro, like in the next couple weeks, about maybe what we think about the NX now or something. I feel like a micro would be more appropriate for that than a full episode.
Well, but we will see.
And then we have ActDeft, aka Mike I, saying yes and no as far as Zelda Breath of the Wild being the only focus. Yes, because they probably sold the game to many people. No, because I probably would have liked to have seen more stuff that's going to be released soon or by the end of the year. But either way, Nintendo made a solid showing.
And, you know, people saying Nintendo made a solid showing, that alone makes me personally think Nintendo made the right call, because going into this, people were like, man, Nintendo is so boned. And now after the fact, people are like, no, that was even the haters, not to say that ActDeft is a hater, but even the haters seem to be on that page of like, wow, that turned out to be all right.
Yeah. And fresh off the presses from Your Enzyme, and this is great because it's kind of like evolving views, or, you know, explaining more about what we heard from the Pokemon tweet. After seeing seeing of how much of a departure Zelda is, I want them to treat Pokemon with the same respect. So there we go. We kind of have more clarification from your enzyme about, you know, the Trubbish comment, or not Trubbish.
And, you know, I will say, your enzyme, I completely agree with you that that would be nice. Unfortunately, you know, there's sort of has always typically been some discussion with Pokemon about how it's almost like a treadmill of, like, bringing new gamers and, like, young children into the Pokemon fold in the Nintendo fold, and each Pokemon game is someone's first, yada yada yada. I think that's probably the series we're gonna see be sort of the most resistant to this kind of revolutionary change, for better or worse. I mean, truly, I do see some strengths to that approach, but also I agree, I would like to see a really fresh take on it.
Agreed. But I mean, also, Pokemon's kind of this, you know, series that is slowly iterated on. They need to keep that child audience in, and, you know, if you change it too radically for the children, they're going to be like, what?
I think you should give children a little more credit, but fact remains, it is what it is. I agree, I agree, your enzyme, I would like to see it evolve the way that we are finally, after freaking 30 years, seeing Zelda evolve. So, unless anyone has anything else, though, it might be time for you to hit those solicitations so we can do our shoutouts.
Yeah. As everyone always, we love your feedback. We like your subscriptions, ratings, and reviews on iTunes, Stitcher Radio, and Google Play. We like your Facebook likes, and we effing love Twitter.
We do. We effing love it.
And our home base is GameBuoy.org.
GameBuoy.org!
You can mail us at MailBuoy@GameBuoy.org.
MailBuoy@GameBuoy.org.
Oh my gosh, what was that? And yeah, with that, I think it's time to shout out to some of our friends.
Yeah, well, you know, we start off here mentioning VogNetwork.com. That is the Voice of Geeks Network. We run on VOG Network. Is it Tuesdays at like noon or 3 or 1 or something?
So it's Tuesdays at 3 p.m. Pacific time.
Excellent.
And then we do an encore on Wednesdays.
Fantastic. You can also hear Girls Gone Wow, where you can get a female perspective on the world's most popular MMO, as well as Orange Lounge Radio, where every gamer has a voice and from whom I steal ever so many of my cues. I'd be remiss not to mention my own other show over on VogNetwork.com. That is Ranger Pridecast, which I do with Shane Alenko. We talk about the current season of the Mighty Morphin Power Rangers meta series, as well as the current season of the Super Sentai TV series upon which it's based, all from a sort of, you know, LGBT perspective. We also have the Starboard Power Coupling podcast, a Star Trek podcast you hope doesn't fail, which just did their 100th episode live last night. Huge congrats to them. We are so proud of you guys, and we absolutely support you. In non-VOG shows, of course, you should check out the Nintendo Love Fest, which does exactly what it says on the tin, as well as their sister show, X Nation, an awesome podcast focusing on Marvel's Mighty Mutants. You should also check out the currently on hiatus Tables, Ladders, and Podcast, a professional wrestling podcast for the common man. And last but not least, the currently on hiatus, but probably not come August 25th, Reading is Fundamental. That is, of course, Queen. Slag Kick's show featuring myself, Rob Roberts from Orange Lounge Radio, and Delvin from VG Realness talking about the current season of RuPaul's Drag Race. Slaggy, you know where I want you to take us to.
I'm going to take you to a game bar. Game Bar is the gay video game Prairie Home Companion and a part of the Hunty Bunch, along with Video Game Realness serving up a weekly dose of gaming chit-chat among friends, La Palanca Podcast Polary para Gay Gamers Latino Americanos en Español, the Nintendo Fun Club, your place for platformers, positivity, and pop punk, Joystick Jockeys, two LGBTQ gamers who love games and love talking about them, and Dia Said, which is Game Buoy superfans Dan and Crystal, who level up their game development skills and discuss the daily grind along the way on a non-daily schedule. And last but certainly not least is our sister ship in the SS Buoy fleet, and that is Anime Buoy, your port of call for anime recommendations, news bits, and discussions that maybe aren't on your radar, but most definitely should be. With E3 being, you know, such a huge week in gaming, we are a little off schedule on Anime Buoy, but we'll be back at you soon with another episode there. And as ever, always, our wonderful theme music was done by Zelda called Reorchestrated, the project that aimed to reorchestrate beautiful Zelda music into gorgeous symphonic sound. They closed their doors quite a while back, but their theme music is now, for those of you who listen, synonymous with Game Buoy. So thank you for that, pouring out a 40 of Lon Lon Milk into the Great 40 fountain. No wonder the fairy is like, because she turned up.
Indeed. All right. Well, that is as perfect a note as any for us to go out on. Thank you so much for joining us on this lovely Saturday afternoon. I hope you've had half as much fun listening as we've had talking to you. We'll be back at you shortly with some more, hopefully, great content. So thank you for sticking with us. We love you guys. Until next time, keep gaming.
Keep gaming.
Keep thinking.
Keep thinking.
And it's dangerous to go alone. Take this. Mics are hot. Speaking to your mic.
Speaking to my mic.
You're already looking good, but yeah. Try again.
Try again.
Yeah, looking good.
Looking good.
Oh, hell no.